Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, lordgaul.podbean.com. I try to upload something to it every week, sometimes every other week. Lately, we've had a lot of kickboxing news, so I'm right back at it with another episode. I think I did one on Sunday. So the other way, and the most efficient way of getting the show, is to go into your iTunes search engine, lordgaul, or enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and my podcast pops right up on iTunes. So, first of all, I need to go ahead and apologize in advance. My original plan for this show was to sit down and break down the, you know, as they have it anyways, break down the glory card, but I was going to really start with a lot of Thai fighting, you know, like a lot of, like, stadium stuff. But then it started getting a lot of questions, a lot of retweets, a lot of people asking about the top 15 list that I just put out for the women's fighting show, for women's pound for pound list. And then I also had another bombshell in the women's game when Glory announced that it's going to do a 8-woman kickboxing field. So I'm going to really focus on the women quite a bit today, just because it's kind of groundbreaking stuff. For the first time in the history of me following kickfighting, women fighting have never had that big tournament to kind of showcase who they are and what their skill sets are. Normally there's just state champions, and every once in a while you get a promoter that puts together a card where the women can compete against the women. You know, it's a rare thing. So I am really excited for the women who are getting this opportunity. I'll do my best to, you know, go down the list and kind of give you guys a little bit of what I was thinking when I put my list together. I'll break it down, and of course, there's going to be dissension, of course, all over the place. All I wanted to do with it, first and foremost, was just to kind of make a list that represented, if you were to look at a picture of the world in kickfighting for this time and era, these would be the women that would be the top. It doesn't necessarily mean 11 is better than 6. You know, you can always make arguments in that way. But I just wanted to make a list so that people that are like, okay, I don't really know too much about the women's game. Maybe they can start to go off of that list. Maybe they can go to it and say, all right, this at least gives me an idea of what I'm talking about. Because it is tough to put the list together off of world championships. So when Glory announced their female field, a lot of the women went up there on stage with world titles that they had won in regional areas, you know. So, again, you know, they had a girl from France. They didn't have the best girl from France. You know, they had, a couple American fighters. Tiffy Von Seuss, of course, makes sense. She is the best girl from America. So ideally, there were things when I looked at the tournament field when I was like, you know what, that makes sense to me. I like the idea of that. That should be a good matchup. But there are also girls who I think had the skill set that could have been in it, and it would have been a very interesting field. Didn't happen that way, but I am glad that we have the start. Glory is a sustainable kickboxing product. They have been a part of the sport for a while now. They've been putting on consistent shows for the last 2 years. The mistake they had 2 years ago when they went with that pay-per-view and it cost them a lot of money, and then they didn't do another show for like 4 or 5 months, they haven't done that, you know, at all. They've stayed with the TV model. They stayed with going to places where kickboxing is big. They've done a good job of taking their time and making sure they made this decision and done this the right way, because this is something that K1 hasn't done in having a women's kickboxing division. So if they can already add it to, you know, a growing field of male fighters, this should be a lot of fun. And I'm excited to see what's going to end from the tournament again. You know, there are Tiffy Von Seuss, that had rated number 6. I have, you know, Amon Barlow, number 2. Clearly, names like, you know, Nissa Mexen was missing and that kind of deal from their tournament field. But I'll go ahead and just open the show on explaining my thinking for the 15 girls that I put into place. Go ahead and start with number 15, Anissa Hadow. I mentioned in the write-up, she just beat Sheena Wendershoven, and she also has victory over Yona Wymans. Her struggle, of course, those are big wins over girls who, you know, Sheena Wendershoven is a title holder for Infusion. They've got the most, until Glory's field today, they had the most consistent female fighting product. And I'm hoping that Amon can fight for both. I think it's to her benefit to keep fighting for both. Fight all year, you know, don't limit yourself to just one area. I believe Infusion is allowing Ilias Belade the opportunity to go fight in Holland, you know, go fight on different cards in Holland if he wants to, but he usually fights for Infusion there, and lately he's been fighting in Japan, you know. So you want your athletes to keep getting opportunities to make money as combat sportsmen. So Anissa getting this victory, that she got the tournament win over in the World Fight League going down in Holland at the beginning of April. Big time wins. She's kind of struggled with consistency before that, but I do think that those are solid enough wins in a sport where you can be world champion without going against anybody. Now, 15 is that weird spot. Julie Brezikova has got a really good kickboxing resume, but the problem is she doesn't fight it enough. You know, Licia Krajkovic, she's got a good resume. Again, just outside. Mariana Kellergi hasn't fought as much lately. Ilona Wyman's, she lost in this tournament field, but that 15-1, anybody can doubt that field. So don't rate me too much on that. There's a lot of, you know, ISIS for beak types that are very, very active. They struggle to get the big win, but they get enough fights internationally and consistent enough for people to wonder, you know, why Rachel Adamus wouldn't make, you know, the 15th spot. But don't critique me too much. I put it there for a reason. You got to start somewhere, and I picked someone who had a decent resume, and they were coming off some pretty good wins in a sport where sometimes the women don't fight the other big-time women. The women at the top of the list are women who have consistently fought other big-time women. So, number 14 is Mio. Mio of Japan is, you know, KO artist, 48 kg. She's got that pop on her hands. She's been their champion for quite some, you know, some time, for a couple of years at that, you know, 2-3 years. She's the girl to beat for them. You know, the Yuki KO was very, very violent. The idea of Mio being in it is, I do credit shootboxing in the way that I credit Infusion for putting an attempt to get female fighters to fight other international females. Now, the trouble that Mio has is Mio does not have the other big-name female fighter to go against, and because of that weight class, that person's probably not coming. So outside of her going to Thailand, she's probably not going to see a kickboxing test. And going to Thailand wouldn't bring her a kickboxing test. It'd bring her a Muay Thai test. But, you know, girls like Lil Tiger and so on or whatever, they're smaller in weight classes and so on. But I gave the nod to Mio, the flavor of having a 48kg fighter. She'll probably never be able to get in the top 10 ever. She'll probably stay around 14, 13, 15 forever just because she doesn't have the fights to move her up. But I do think that there should have been something done in the recognition of what she's accomplished. I want to do something to recognize what she's accomplished in the sport. Samantha Van Doorn is a weird one because she's fought some of the elite girls. She's got two losses to Iman Barlow, who's number two on my list. But, you know, the victory over Sam Brown, the victory over Petrozilla Gabelli, the victory over Yona Wymans, she's just found her stride. And she's fighting at a weight class where I was surprised that her name didn't come up when they came out with this this field today for Glory. She's the one to look for down the road because she's going to bring entertaining fights. Eva Naranjo, big win over Sam Brown. Of course, that matters. She's got the controversial win over Iman Barlow in her hometown. Spain has got a history of those kind of decisions when you look at, you know, some of the cards that went in favor of Abraham Wilkini. So they've got that history, but it was a close fight, so I'm not going too crazy. But she also competes in boxing. She hasn't competed consistently enough for me to move her up. She did have a very solid effort against my number one in SMXN, but Eva Naranjo from Spain, just need to see her kickbox more, and I could see her moving up, but she's older, and I, you know, making boxing money, I can't fault anybody for that. You know, Anke van Gestel of Belgium, you know, I did accidentally go ahead and somebody caught it. I meant to put from Belgium. I put from Germany when I first put this out. Somebody caught it. We were able to fix it on liverkick.com. My apologies there. Van Gestel is interesting because she's got some quality wins, and she's also got some losses to some, you know, solid girls. Like, she went against Valentina Shevchenko, and she lost to her twice in a year, once in Muay Thai, once in kickboxing. But I like that she took that chance. But she got the wins over Rashida Bohut, who's the champion above the weight class that she was in. Alita Alawant is another solid name. Claire Hay, of course, is a veteran, you know, Muay Thai kickboxer in the history. Like, if there's a Hall of Fame, she would probably get in on just, like, workman-like, not necessarily the biggest victories, but for fighting anybody, anywhere, Claire Hay was that girl. She's got a victory over her, Sarah DeBabe, Ilona Wyman's in what was one of the great fights in women kickboxing history, and Lindsay Haycraft-Shear. Anca Van Gastel deserves to be on this list. I have her at 11 because, like I said, she's lost some of those step-up fights. But she fights enough, and she's young enough to make her way into a more elite women's division, women's weight class, in particular if they do a bigger weight class with women next year, as they said they would in the women's press conference. It is huge that Anca Van Gastel got this opportunity through the years to keep herself active. And next year, when they do have a bigger weight class, Anca Van Gastel has got to be a easy no-brainer, in particular because Belgium's got a decent kickboxing scene, so I could see a decent crowd coming out and supporting her there. I remember it's Showtime went to Belgium a couple times when they were having their trouble with, combat sports, and the mayor and his view of kickboxing and so on, and Holland. But that's changed drastically lately. If you saw the UFC went there, if you saw the Glory Card there, so clearly events are back on in Holland. But Anca Van Gastel can bring an audience once they do their shows in Amsterdam. So because Belgium's not that far of a drive, so happy to have her on this list. Antonia Shevchenko, of course, is she's coming off the win earlier in the year against Letitia Bekesi and Shauna Lammers. Bekesi's solid. She's fought in it's Showtime before. Antonina's going to struggle with weight class. Really the only it girl that she has. And I could see it. If she's going to be fighting at 135, it just kind of depends on where that second class is for Glory next year. Because I could see her and Anca Van Gastel and Rashida Buhut and Aleida Lawant ending up in the same weight class. Lindsay Haycraft-Shear is retired, but for Glory, I wouldn't be surprised if they were able to talk her to coming back. And Antonina's biggest opposition right now, it's looking like, is going to be Urina Bears. Because Urina Bears is the it girl for a lion fight. They've been getting her fights after the victory over Cyborg and so on. They've been getting her fights. Antonina was brought in to be the legit test for her. I don't know. I think they should give Antonina one fight to kind of showcase her skills and then make that fight down the road between her and Urina. So I'm hoping that that's how it happens. I hope they do it. Bob Arum style back in the day. Bob Arum used to go main event and co-main event. They would fight, people who were serviceable, but they would, the main fighters would win. And then those two fighters would fight on the next card down the road. I'm hoping they do something like that with Antonina Shevchenko and Urina Bears. So I'm hoping that they move her in such a way. And if they use her and the opportunity for Glory Kickboxing down the road, if they go to that weight class, that would be exciting stuff. Jemima Betrain is an interesting one because she's another person that could have been named for that Glory list. The Holland Surinese product is, she's only got the only thing that I'd say is really working against her is activity and kickboxing. But she doesn't have a loss in kickboxing to the best of my memory. She's got the Christy Baraton fight. She stopped her. E. Meddy's another person I'm going to mention. She's actually a one-way class or one spot above Jemima. She's got a victory over her. The Wang Kahan fight is awesome stuff because Kahan almost had her knocked out, and then Jemima Betrain had to bite down and battle back, and she won the next two rounds, forced into an extra, won the extra. She has been doing MMA here and there. She posts videos about, training. She moves out to LA a lot of times to train for a little while. Just the MMA fights, one of them fell through on a fight day. I was surprised that she hadn't been competitive since then. I added her to this list, but she can't be higher because of her activity. But really, she has the potential to be number one. And she is in she can make the weight class that Glory came out with, 122 pounds, she can make that weight class. Glory did a great job of picking the weight class where the deepest field of women are, and that's very, very important. So, Jemima Betrain, someone to look out for down the road to be in that tournament field. E. Meddy is the Chinese fighter who, she's got a victory over Isis Verbeek. She's got a controversial victory over Anissa Mexen, the number one fighter on this list. She's been fighting, somebody even said it, I can only find for sure a certain amount of fights, but she's won, in a calendar year, I want to say she's probably won like 8 or 9 times fighting because the, Kunlun, they are a TV show. So that's why they keep getting that opportunity and, they get, millions and millions of viewers because there's so many people in China. Imedi's one of the consistent fighters for them. She's got some weird decisions that's gone her way, but she definitely deserves to be in the top 10. Wang Qihan, I have above her because Wang Qihan is, she has done what people in this sport fear to do, what Iman Barlow is doing. She's left the safety of the judges in her hometown, and she's gone out and she's fought very, very skilled girls. Irina Mazepa is a girl who's one of the reserve fights for coming up this weekend, and they say that she's part of the 10-woman weight class that they have in there. Wang Qihan got a victory over her. We've got her victory over Masha Valent, which she's got Michelle Mechie. She fought in the States. She's fought in Belarus. She's fought in the Philippines. Wang Qihan has put herself out there outside of the victories that she's gotten in Kunlun. But bigger than it all is the fact that she brings KO Pop to the picture, like legit KO Pop. Tiffany Von Suits also brings legit KO Pop to it. But really, Wang Qihan, she can crack with that left hook. So I have her at number 7, and she's in position. She's starting to get a little bit bigger in weight. That's going to, of course, come into play. She's been competing a little bit bigger. I still think that she can make 122 if she had to. That is the wealth. That is the gem weight class for the females. So good stuff for Wang Qihan. Tiffany Von Suess speaks for herself. Victories over Ashley Nichols. Bernice Aldis was a very big win. Because Bernice Aldis, even though she came off of the having the baby, and then she had the one fight and for Yakao, it was a really good matchup for her and Tiffany Von Suess. And Tiffany Von Suess looked very, very good in the matchup. Cut her early. Was able to avoid the big-time clinch. The Lucy Payne wins. The first stoppage was awesome. The Alexis Rufus stoppage was awesome. Those are some big-time wins. Tiffany Von Suess, 6 is a perfect spot for her. Because, of course, she also has losses to Denise Kielholz. And then she has a loss to Kaylee Reese. So, no shame in, those defeats. Because those were elite girls. Kaylee Reese was considered the best female Muay Thai fighter in the world in that weight class. Denise Kielholz was considered the best kickboxing fighter in the world. So she went against both of those girls, and Kaylee Reese came to America, but she went to Holland for Denise Kielholz. So shout out to Tiffany Von Suess, who's put herself out there to really test and see if she could, do well, like that she could do her thing in the kickboxing world and in the Muay Thai world. She's now done with her Lion Fight contract, it sounds like, and she's signed with Glory, and I'm excited to see what comes from them down the road. Rena is a longtime champion. She's a little bit smaller, but can do that 22 weight class if she had to. A little bit smaller. She's probably better suited for what would be straw weight, according to the UFC, at 115 pounds. She's probably better suited for competing around there. But wins over Ai Takahashi. I mean, she has a loss there, but I think she's got 2 wins. Kristina Jurjevic, she's got 2 wins there. Ellie and Marina Ekstrom, she's got wins there. And of course, her most important win, people don't realize this, but Erica Kimimura came out and beat Rena in what was like this exhibition one rounder, and she like dropped Rena a couple times, and people were like, whoa, where did that come from? Then Erica got used by, some of the Japanese promotions, not so much Crush, but I want to say Rise. But she started doing well. She started, getting victories. She won a, shoot boxing tournament. Rena, who, needed a big-time victory over Erica because she's been serious about her combat sports. They met in a 5-round decision, went Rena's way. It was a close fight, but it went Rena's way. That was a huge win for her. That because Erica Kamimura would be on this list, no question about it, had illness not ended her career because she was that. She also had KO Pop. So shout out to Rena. Rena definitely deserves to be here. And adding to the fact that Rena is talented and she's an attractive woman, she brings that KO Pop. Because the body shot that she put Zaza So Ari with, her stoppage over Rian Thong on the last shootboxing tournament she was in, she brings it. She brings it. So shout out to Rena. She has been their stable champion. They've been moving her for a while. She hasn't lost since 2011 when she was 19. She's very, very talented. Denise Kielholz, she is the best fighter resume-wise at 57 kgs. She just is. She has the Victory's Over, Cindy Hoare, Vicky Church, Lucy Payne, Lucia Krushevic, as I mentioned before, Lindsay Haycraft Shear, twice. The Yona Wyman's fight, of course, was controversial because they had to go back to the scorecards and then things were changed. Yona won on fight night. They dispute the decision. They kind of go back and look at it, something that happens in Holland quite often, and then they decided that Denise Akiholtz was the actual winner. But she gets her hands raised over everybody. You know, and I mentioned the Tiffany Von Suess victory. She is now competing in the Bellator Kickboxing Organization. It's a little bit heavier in weight than the, as of right now, I believe it's a little bit heavier in weight than what's going on in Lori. But man, Denise Akiholtz brings it. Now, of course, she also brings the aesthetic value of being physically attractive and so on. So shout out to Denise Akiholtz. She definitely deserves to be here. Urina Bears is here because she's never... I know that she's lost in kickboxing, but I believe it also was disputed. The loss that I'm thinking of was also disputed. I think it was moved to it was against Arenta, and I think they moved it to like a no contest or something like that. But Urina and her team, they were surprised that they didn't win. Not just win, they were surprised they didn't win easy. Nevertheless, Urina Bars out there, you know, trying to remain undefeated, in the kickboxing world, and now she's doing it in full rules Muay Thai, which isn't even her strength. You know, Urina, for a tall fighter, isn't the best clinch fighter. She's still more of a in-space combination kick fighter. But Martina Jendrova, she's beaten her twice, Chantel Ugi twice, Anissa Hidalgo, who I mentioned before, number 15th ranked person. It matters to beat another ranked girl. She's got a victory there. Then, of course, I always say it all the time, probably the most important victory in all of women's kickboxing and Muay Thai, her victory over Cyborg was huge. It wasn't just that Urina Bars won, but when someone just shows up and they go, oh, we're going to throw world champions in this sport against you because you're such an aggressive, awesome athlete, you're going to win just because. And Urina Bears came out. Not only did she win, she kind of cracked the aura of invincibility. Not that Cyborg isn't still an awesome beast of a fighter in MMA, but that night, I don't think anybody thought that she could be dropped. And she was dropped like 4 seconds into the fight with the teep, and then drop with a head kick, and then drop with a knee. It's just, it kind of put a crack into the wall of invincibility that was Cyborg. So Urina Bears, she can't be any less than 3 for doing that, for having that on her resume. So again, down the road, Glory brings in that weight class. I mentioned some of the names before, and of course the fight with Antonina Shevchenko, a very big possibility for the Lion Fight brand moving forward. Number 2, Iman Barlow. Iman Barlow would be number 1 had it not been for the loss that she suffered in a tournament to Anissa Mexen. She was stopped in that loss. But nobody fights as much as Iman Barlow does. Iman Barlow, and I only mentioned some of the names. Samantha Van Doorn, she's got 2 victories over her. Alexis Rufus, Maria LeBeau, Eddie Rodham, Melanie Higgins, Joanna Rydberg, Emerald Dean, and Ferial is in that reserve fight that I was mentioning with I forget who she's fighting. I just kind of eludes me, but she's in that reserve fight for Glory on their card going on tomorrow. Fanny Palimpi, Fanny is a very accomplished fighter from Greece who's been going to Thailand, and she's been fighting kickboxing, and she's been winning. All this after losing to Iman Barlow. Iman Barlow has been fighting the best girls. She's been going to other countries and fighting that country's best girl. She just went to Slovakia and just did it the other day. Iman Barlow probably fights 7-8 times a year. She is, when I interviewed her for the kickboxing documentary in 2011, I said, this girl's going to be the future of the sport. Anissa Mexen, older, ended up making her name as well, but Anissa Mexen at that time wasn't even close to fighting what Iman Barlow was fighting. But Iman Barlow, the rightful number 2, almost number 1. She wins this Glory tournament. I could see myself moving her up to number 1, in particular if she does it in an indominant fashion. But style-wise, if she meets Van Suess, that's going to be an interesting battle. It's going to be an interesting battle. Van Suess with the movement, Tiffany, always good at finding her shots and her angles. Iman, of course, got that straightforward style. She's got the body kicks. She's got the hand volume, believes in her 1-2s and 3-2s. And then if it's in a clinch at all, if they give the active Glory clinch of 5 seconds, Iman's going to be able to hold dominant position there, whereas I think Tiffany's probably going to just try to push her into the ropes and kill the clinch. It's definitely Tiffany's gotten better there, but not at Mon Barlow better that I can see with the eye test. So it should be a lot of fun. Good stuff for Tiffany. And then my number one, Anissa Mexen. It's not just that she's winning. It's also that she's stopping people. You take the Emedi loss out. You know, she's got a victory over Maria Lobo. She's got a victory over Ashley Nichols, names that I've mentioned before. Isis Verbeek, who's fighting for glory. Joanna Rydberg, Adi Rodham, Fet Yanying. Those girls were all stopped, you know. Like, she's just a very, very exceptional athlete and fighter. She's got a mean left hook. She really brings the show. So that's why she's my number one. When I saw Glory's tournament field didn't have her in the field, and it had a French fighter in the field, I was disappointed in the field. Like it's just, she is the elite girl. She needs to be on the list. It's just, I mean, it's unfortunate. I mean, I'm not going, you know, too crazy about it because it's their first field. I was just tweeting back and forth with Dave Walsh of Liverkick.com, and he talked about what that first female field looked like that first max field looked like, or early K1s. They had people in there where you're like, how did this person get in here? They were just putting it together. So I am proud to say, as a Glory kickboxing fan, thank you very much for giving these women the opportunity to have something that other women in the world never had. The opportunity to definitively say, this is the number one female fighter in the sport and kickboxing in a weight class. It gives that opportunity. Because even if Anissa Mexen's not in this field, she can get next year's field, and gives her the opportunity to make a name for herself. So that wasn't done before. Before, we just assumed, okay, this one's beating everybody else. She's given herself the most international opportunities to go against elite competition. She's the girl, you know. And sometimes, of course, it can be easy. With Lucia Riker, it's clearly easy. Easy that Lucia Riker was the best fighter in the world. She was stopping everybody in England, Holland, all over the world. Whoever she got in there with, they had to go. So it was clear that it was her. And then after she was done, you know, when Jermaine came around, it was clear that it was Jermaine. There was other good female fighters, but it was really, really clear that it was Jermaine. And then after Jermaine, you know, we had that Lucy Kitchen, and then we moved into Miriam Nakamoto, and then, like, it just kind of stayed around that kind of, you kind of followed a certain weight class, you followed a certain fighter that kind of stayed at the top in a certain era, a certain period of time. But never did we have the opportunity for me to say, eight-woman field, this is who it's going to be. And I've joked on, you know, fight forums in the past, and I've brought it up on the podcast in the past. If you ever want to put a field together, let me know. I'll give you the right field to put together. I am just grateful that a field was put together, and I really think that this fight is going to be a lot of fun. Like, I think at this tournament, it's going to be a lot of fun. Mentioning some of the names, Hesma Hassas from Morocco, training in Holland. That seems like she was gotten into the field. Could be a connection that she has with the Hammers Gym. Not that she's a bad fighter, she's solid, but out of Holland, I probably would have gone Samantha Van Doorn at this period of time, but shout out to her. Zoila Frosto versus Daniela Graf. Zoila Frosto's doesn't have the biggest kickboxing resume as of right now. She's got some Muay Thai fights, she's got some kickboxing, but she's got every bit of the skill set to be successful in kickboxing. Big legs, big you know, low kick whip. She definitely has the skill set to succeed. Now, in my mind of having the best in the world, I would not have chose her in the top eight. But once she's in that field, do I think that she's got the skill set to succeed? For sure. And she's got the style to succeed. Daniela Graf, she is a German fighter, solid. Again, there are, Ania Fuchs is fighting a little bit bigger, but that's probably the best fighter in Germany as far as the women's kickboxing games go. But you know, Graf's a solid fighter. Emile Debbie, I mentioned before, from France, she would not be in my field, in particular, not over Anissa Mexen. No way. No way. But I'm fine with her being in this first one. Ji Wing Lee, I'm assuming she's making it just for the international flavor, as they were saying. They said that term several times in the podcast list, on the Glory. I watched it on my phone, that's why I said podcast. But they had this press conference, and they mentioned that they had an international flavor. Jusun Lim would be my pick. She's very skilled. She's pretty. She is the girl who, she's got a victory over Rena. Sung is a girl who I thought that if you're going to pick someone, it would have been her. but she's been super focused on CrossFit. She came to Texas, my state, recently just to do CrossFit. So I would have picked her, but I'm fine with Yiling Lee being into it. Isis Verbeek, she takes on, you know, she's okay. International fighter, gets a lot of opportunities in China. Her passport is set. She's probably up there with Anka Van Gestel and Iman Barlow as far as fighting every year. But her going against Iman, the field works out for just off the eye test, Iman Barlow getting to the final against Tiffany Von Soest, just off the eye test of resume. Does not mean that something different could happen. But I'm telling you, it's going to be tough for either of those three girls in the bottom half of this bracket to beat Iman Barlow. That is going to be tough. But I'm excited about it. I'm excited that Iman Barlow's in glory. I'm excited about the women having this platform. It should be a lot of fun. Going to go ahead and go into the tournament field. Going to the undercard, of course. Mentioned before, Tiffany Von Soest versus Esma Hassas, solid. Connections, who she knows, probably got her this opportunity for the Moroccan fighter. Skill set wise, Tiffany Von Soest is who I'd go with all the way. Tiffany Von Soest still got the big low kick whip, even though she's not as physically big as she used to be. She's trying to prepare herself to be in a range where she can make the cut to 115 for MMA. She was trying to do both. Line fight apparently did give her the opportunity to do both, which is a little crazy. I would have, you know, considering she's one of the biggest stars, I would have just let her do it and then fight for me twice a year, three times a year, and still do MMA. But they were adamant about not letting that happen. Gloria was not, so... Tiffany Von Soest is going to be the first fight on the card, it's looking like. So, shout out to Tiffany Von Soest. It should be a lot of fun. I'm excited to see what she brings to the table. I've got her winning. I just don't see how Hassas is going to get this victory. If she does, she's got the kickboxing style to put the combination, and kicks together to get up on the scorecard. But Tiffany Von Soest is very tough to hit several times in a row. When was the last time you ever seen Tiffany Von Soest get hit with a three-punch combo? Very rare to see. So that should be good. I got Tiffany Von Soest winning that one. The field is very, very, you know, American strong, as most of the Glory American ones are. The Glory cards, for the most part, do not represent the American Glory cards, for the most part, top to bottom, don't represent the best fighters in the world, like your Amsterdam card would. But they do have solid names, some very solid names that can put up some pretty good opposition. So we'll see moving down the road what these fighters will become. But, you know, I am just grateful that they're getting some opportunity. But I don't see this card as a reflection of the best fighters in the world, fighters that are just getting the opportunity to grow. Now, there are some people who are of the best fighters in the world in their weight class, but there are clearly some people that are not. So, Manny Manchu, as he takes on Warren Thompson. Now, these are guys who, Warren Thompson's been used by Glory a lot. He's getting opportunities to fight and compete. I would not consider him one of the best fighters in the world. Manchu had that, you know, solid run in the line fight the legacy kickboxing tournament field. He had a pretty good run, some nasty-looking fights as far as aesthetics goes, but he still throws that heat. The kid goes up there and throws KOs. So, shout-out to Manchu. This should be, you know, Warren Thompson has the kickboxing style to beat Mancha, but I just think Mancha brings the KO pop and he can score something to put Thompson down. If it goes to decision, I would go Warren Thompson. I think he can do a better job of scoring combinations and kicks. He's not super consistent with it, but I can see him being more consistent than Mancha. Mancha will play with it too. He's growing and learning as a fighter, too. He's got he comes to the table with some good physical attributes, Manny Mancha. I still think that his main physical attribute is he can crack better than these guys. So I think he's going to be able to touch Thompson at some period of time. I think that his power in the light heavyweight division holds up no matter who he's fighting. He just doesn't have the skill set to do it, the Gokhan Sakis of the world. But right now, this is a good fight for both guys. Really good matchmaking by Core Hemmers on this one. Solid stuff. And shout out, because this could have also been Haycraft, because it is a USA versus USA guy. So I think that Mancha will score something to give him the edge. The next fight does reflect some of the better fighters in the world. Gute and Asante coming off the KO victory over Mario Dennis. He's going to take on Brian Doze, who is the workman kickboxer. He's a replacement. Doze's replacement. But, you know, he is, we laugh because he won the Kumite, like, what, last year? But he won the one that, you know, Frank Dukes won. So it's, like, mythical, but it actually does exist. And Brian Doe's actually won that thing. And, you know, I mean, we kind of laugh in the kickboxing community. Doe's is a solid guy who's never beaten elite guys. You know, he's had opportunities with Danny Gita, has been stopped. He's had step-up opportunities here and there. He just doesn't have the KO pop. But in today's generation of heavyweights, not having the KO pop's not the end of the world, you know, because as long as you've got kickboxing skill, there's a more skilled group at the top. You don't have too many Jerome Banners and Mike Bernardos walking around where it's, if you don't throw a KO pop, you're going to get it, you know, because they're just too big and strong and they throw heat. So, Doz and Innocente is good. Innocente's got good kickboxing. Like, when I watched him on film, I'm like, I think his kickboxing's good. The spinning hook kick, of course, they use that in Glory a lot. Tomorrow's the homeboy. So it's good to see that he's been okay since then. Just got caught. The Innocente, I'm going to go ahead and pick him to win because he's been sitting here focusing on this fight for a while. Would not be surprised if Doz won this fight. But Gute Innocente, I think that he is being moved the right way. I think that he's going to have – he's fighting the right type of fights. This is a good second fight, you know. And I want to see him continue to get guys like Hezdy Hergez and so on, guys who are not necessarily in that tournament picture. You know, I think this is good for him. So shout out to Gute Innocente. I think that he gets the victory over Brian Doz in a solid fight. Doz, I'm telling you, Brian Doz is a solid fighter. So this should be good kickboxing. This fight reflects some of the better kickboxers on the planet, at least top 30 guys. So this, you know, guys between the, you know, 25 to 35 range, if you want. I wouldn't say that they're that low, but at least between 20 and 30, you can make an argument for Gute Innocente and Brian Doz. So glad this fight's on the card. Michael Mayer tries to stop his inconsistency in Glory kickboxing as he takes on Carl Robertson. Michael Mayer, of course, they keep calling him undefeated in Lion Fight because he's undefeated in Full Rules Muay Thai and he's lost in kickboxing. I don't know why they do that. It's not that someone's going to watch any more or less if they find out that he's got some losses in kickboxing. But Mayer, he's gone out, he fought for the Glory brand before, came out, won a tournament over on the West Coast, I want to say. He won the tournament at middleweight. And then after winning that tournament, he goes out to New York, and then he runs into, you know, the first of his troubles, I guess, if you will, with being consistent in his time at Glory. Now, again, for the most part, to his, you know, credit, he's only been going against really, really tough dudes. But he's been 2-3 for the Glory brand. And that Wayne Barrett loss that happened in New York, I think that the whole idea of the tournament was to go around who Wayne Barrett is. Was to move Lemaire and who he is as a guy who America found this gem in. But since then, he had that loss. He had a bounce-back win with Dusty Jacoby, and then he lost to Robert Thompson, and then he beat Casey Green, and then he lost to Joe Schilling. So that's the game that he's been playing. He's going to have to develop some consistency. Carl Robertson, of course, I think we gave him a little bit too much love because really he almost beat Jerome LeBanner in a card in France. He won by knockout, and then they went, gave LeBanner what would amount to about a 22-second count, and then they restarted the fight, and then LeBanner won on points, and I think that was the last time LeBanner fought. Carl Robertson moves down to middleweight. I'm thinking, okay, this guy's going to be something. He's got good kickboxing skill set. I picked him to win in their four-man tournament that he had. A lot of people picked him to at least do well. Goes out there, gets stopped by Dustin Jacoby in the first round. And he's looking to bounce back. Should be a good one. I guess it just kind of depends on who shows up. This is like a pick-em fight right here. I'm going to lean Mike Lemaire, but man, I would not rule out Carl Robertson winning this fight. The rematch of a very entertaining fight last year. Jason Willness is going to meet Joe Schilling again. I'm going to pick Joe Schilling because Joe Schilling was winning the overall kickboxing for me. Willness is good, bites in the mouthpiece, but he's hittable. He throws pretty hard, but you know when he caught Schilling, and Schilling can be caught, he couldn't put Schilling down. And Schilling is going to, if there's one thing that you got to credit Joe Schilling for, stitch him up, puts volume on. He tries to score a lot in every round. And he's weird. He's got a weird style. He's tough to get a handle on. Joe Schilling, I think, is going to win a decision here. Wouldn't be surprised if he scored something that stopped Willness. Wouldn't be surprised if Willness scored something that stopped him. But Joe Schilling brings it. All action. He's a very entertaining fighter. I was bringing up how I wish he was on the kickboxing or the televised portion of this card because he's Joe Schilling. He brings it. You know, he's probably the most recognizable American kickboxing name. But because of the Glory Fight Pass deal, there's some things that they wanted. Von Soest and Schilling were people that they wanted to make sure that they got on that portion of it. So that's why Schilling is once again headlining the Fight Pass fourth portion of the Glory Super Fights undercard. So, but shout out to Schilling, shout out to Wellness. Should be a lot of fun. These gentlemen bring it. They represent high-level kickboxing. We move into the tournament field. This tournament field is not elite at all. But it's got fighters that actually have good skill set in terms of their kickboxing potential. You know, Francis Ambong, he just doesn't have the slickness that you need in kickboxing. He's very, very hittable. But as far as his low kick whip, his combination of low kick whip game, it rivals what you would see in pretty much any other country, in Holland and so on. He just doesn't have that extra turn it into something else. You know, it stays consistently. It looks a certain way the whole time. Ambong can still, combination and low kick you. And I remember when somebody told me that he was like 27, 28, I was surprised. I thought he was like 37, 38. But he is a good, solid kickboxer who's had opportunities, and he's got pretty good KO pop against a certain level of guy. I was very, very impressed with the Daniel Morales guy. He fought Casey Green, and I thought he beat Casey Green on points. Very slick, had good movement. The KO pop is going to hurt him. He doesn't have the kind of pop that hurts you. But he had volume and he had slickness, and I thought he was scoring a lot. And I thought they gave it to Green because Green scored those sit-down-on-your-punches type of shots. That's what's going to hurt Morales here. I'm still going to pick him in what would be a slight upset. I think that he's slick enough to out-point Ambang. And if he plays with the southpaw stance, he can cut off that big low-kick whip. Ambang, he comes so wide from the outside that going at the inside leg is a little bit more of a struggle. So I definitely think that Morales can get this victory. Casey Green and Richard Abraham. Richard Abraham's coming off of a pretty solid win. You know, that victory over Paulo Jędrzejczyk in Chicago was very, very clear in his favor. Like, he was so much stronger than Jędrzejczyk. He threw big power shots, was able to walk him down. Good, solid performance. And he comes from a Muay Thai background, and he's got some lion fight appearances. Casey Green, he, of course, has been doing pretty solid in quiet and glory. Like, he's doing well. Like, people know enough to pay attention to him. But 4-2 for a guy who's got, like, a weird style. But he's got some pretty cool stoppages in there. The John King stoppage was solid. The Francis Ambang stoppage. Dustin Jacoby lost, but he had, you know, some moments before that. Six opportunities, four wins. I think because of his fight style, this is going to be a very entertaining fight. It's really going to could go either way in my mind, because Abraham really does have good pop. I'm going to lean Casey Green over Richard Abraham, because I think that sometimes scorecards can go towards the familiar, and Green has fought more consistently for Glory than Abraham has. In a close fight that I see going to an extra round, I got Green winning it, and then I got Green beating Morales again in the final. It just comes down to, I think Green brings more KO pop. And that's the one thing that Morales is lacking. He's got the skill set, he's got the slickness, and he's going to be able to score. He just doesn't have the pop. We then move on to Murat Gurian, who is going to beat Giam Kalabali. Kalabali is a solid guy, and he's getting these opportunities, and I'm happy for him. But Murat Gurian, who is still the reigning K1 70kg champion, he just has that style. He's going to pressure, combinations of the low kick. He lost a split decision to Robin van Roosmalen, and I'd love to see that fight happen again. He fought Chidichai pretty damn tough. Really, really tough. So I think Murat Gurian is just a superior fighter. He is a top five fighter in my mind in the world at that weight class right now. Giam is not a bad fighter. He's just not going to beat Murat Gurian. That's just all it is to it. Last fight in the card, we talk about Simon Marcus as he takes on Dustin Jacoby. Dustin Jacoby, of course, is a great story because his kickboxing, basically his career in Glory, I believe he is 6-6, if I'm remembering correctly. Let me go ahead and look at it. 6-6. He started off his, you know, kickboxing career with Glory. Of course, we've said it many times. He literally saw entering the tournament field that they had in Tulsa, where they did the, I guess what would be the light heavyweight division. He saw it as an opportunity to get some sparring in. That's how he saw it. So he took the fight on one day notice, and then they moved Randy Blake to fighting him on that tournament night. You know, Randy Blake clearly one of the favorites, Brian Collette the other favorite. They moved Randy Blake over there. He stops all three of his guys, stops Randy Blake, stops Brian Collette, comes out, goes to London, and I'm there in London. And Michael Dude is insulted that this guy who's new, who shouldn't be in his weight class, who shouldn't be on his level, gets the fight. And Michael Dude just runs him over, gets into the Glory field again, and he goes the bigger one. He won a regional tournament for the U.S. when he first won, when he beat Collette and Blake. He went into the New York field that was won by Tyrone Spong that night. But he went against Brian Collette, and he got a victory that I thought Collette was going to get. And I was like, hey, this is pretty good. I've had him by the gym before. One of the nicest people you're going to meet, Jacoby. I was very surprised by that. And then came the streak of losses to very good names. Daniel Younga, no shame in losing to him. Daniel Younga pretty much put on a low kick clinic there. Makoto Ohira, that was the fight that he had been, he helped one of my fighters. That's when I got to meet Jacoby. He stayed at my house. Good fun guy. He was preparing, that fight came up, and then he had to go back home to prepare for it full, so he left our camp after like 1 week. But he didn't put any volume in O'Hare. It just kind of walked him down. He didn't score enough offense. That loss, followed by the Alex Pereira loss, a guy who needs to be back in the Glory picture, followed by Mike LaMare loss, and then a short-notice fight, Murad Buzidi. The Buzidi fight, short-notice, at the time he's doing short-notice MMA fights, he's doing everything but sit down and focus on his kickboxing career. Everything but that. He was just, not that he wasn't in the gym, not that he wasn't training, he just wasn't giving himself the best opportunity to have success because he wasn't focusing on fighting the guys who he needed to fight. And then all of a sudden, they keep giving him the level of guys that he needed to fight to get his confidence up, to see his skill set work. And he has stopped five guys in a row for Glory. Ariel Spoveta, Casey Green, Wayne Barrett, Carl Robertson, and then Wayne Barrett again. All stoppages. The second Wayne Barrett one's a little weird. But nevertheless, he was able to turn it around. The only problem with that row of fighters outside of Wayne Barrett, you can make the argument that, I mean, you're not even making the argument. None of those guys are of elite level. None of them. None of those guys in that range of fighters. But he still turned things around for himself. Then you get Simon Marcus, who loses to Joe Schilling at Last Man Standing, but at one period of time, he was up. He'd scored a down. Like Joe Schilling had to win two rounds and then get the epic KO in that extra round. One of the great fights in Glory history. Then he's got the wins over Wayne Barrett and Jason Wilnes in Dubai, which I did not see coming. I thought Wilnes would get that one, or Barrett. I thought that Marcus was struggling with the kickboxing. And then he had two very, very not good-looking fights with Artem Levin. And the second one, the first one, I had no problem with it being a draw. It was very close. It was very difficult to get a read on. The second fight, first of all, I was surprised that they allowed this fight to be a headliner. But Artem Levin, he's got the craftiness and the movement, and he doesn't really have KO pop. He can hit you the right way, but he doesn't have KO pop. This, because Simon Marcus has got the super Muay Thai resume. He's got two wins over Joe Schilling in Muay Thai. He's got wins over Artem Levin in Muay Thai. He's just a elite, all-time great in Muay Thai, in particular at that weight class. I really do believe Simon Marcus has got that kind of resume in his life. And he talked about how he had fought on cards in China, where I remember I interviewed him and I thought that they were tournaments. He says, no, I just fought two guys in one night, and it was all about resume. He said he went out to Thailand and he just went out there and stayed there for a year and a half to build resume, and he'd literally go places and fight for like $10. You know, the equivalent of $10 are the equivalent of the drive down there, because he just needed the fights to build resume. He then enters kickboxing. He puts on the best kickboxing display he had with that really quick body kick against Jason Wilnes and Wayne Barrett. Comes out there, very sloppy, clinch fest type matches with Artem Levin. I got Simon Marcus winning this fight because he is the better Muay Thai and kickboxer. He's got the better resume against elite guys over time. Jacoby has the KO pop to make this happen for himself. Don't count Jacoby out. But as the fight goes longer, I think the skill set of Marcus can take over. Jacoby can still do stuff. Before the Pierre KO, he had showed some good combinations in that, like some good combination of low kick flow. He showed glimpses of what could happen with him as a fighter if he got this all put together. He went out to Hemmer's gym, really trained hard for it. He just, you know, met a superior guy and got caught with a big shot. But the fight with Marcus is going to test him because Marcus doesn't bring that constant combination low kick threat, but he plays the body kick well, and he will bite down his mouthpiece in exchange with Jacoby. It's in those moments that he can go down, you know, Jacoby can go down, or Marcus can go down. But I lean in a 5-round fight towards the champion keeping the title. Fun stuff. Glad to talk glory with you guys. Again, please forgive me. Please forgive me for not having the Thai fights broken down. I just kept getting a lot of, you know, buzz off of that article, and I wanted to make sure that I explained it because I just posted it out there. And then I had another article planned where I was going to say the girls that should be signed to the Glory brand, but they announced those girls. I thought that they were just going to announce the weight class and the fights, but they announced the 10 girls. So then I was like, well, you know, I'll go ahead and take my time on that one. You still have the top 15 list to go off of, and I can move it accordingly, for those who really want to follow that sort of thing. Nothing that happens this weekend is going to move anybody forward, up or down, but still a good list to go off of for those who want to follow women's kickboxing game. I'm so proud of my female kickboxers in the world. I'm so happy that you guys have this opportunity around the strongest weight class. That's the most important thing. It happened between 52 and 54 kgs. That is the strength of female kickboxing. So I'm so excited for the girls to have this opportunity. God bless you, to all my listeners. Thank you so much for following my kickboxing podcast. Please forgive me for not having the stadium Muay Thai stuff. I will have it. I promise it's coming. And then also the summer series, I'm going to get that started off soon. I'll go ahead and announce before I do it, but I'm going to have that started soon. So thank you all for listening, and you guys have good weekends. Get out there. Watch this kickboxing. Watch Glory. See what's going on. Everybody have a good one. Peace.